You're listening to Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas with an emphasis on homeopathy. In this episode, we're going to be talking about some things that might be a little hard for some people to hear because we're focusing on trauma. So there might be some traumatic events that are discussed that could be problematic for some people. So just listen carefully if this is one that you might have concerns about, whether it would impact you negatively, or if you really think that it might not be so great for you, go ahead and skip it until you're ready for it at another time. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Mom and Doc Talk. We are having our second episode, and we've realized already before we've even finished this one that we are going to have three episodes with Dr. Karen Lamb, because there's just so much that we need to talk about when it comes to trauma. So that's what we're talking about. We're continuing a deep dive into all things related to trauma, understanding trauma, and some of the questions that you guys have sent in to us to make sure we get them all addressed. And then next episode, we will deep dive into opportunities and things that you can consider for treatment to make sure that you get help if this is part of what you need. So stay tuned. We will get there to how to address this and like different treatment and therapy options. And we want to make sure we fully investigate all of the things that are related to trauma so that people know what it is that they're looking at. So if you want to get the whole introduction for Dr. Karen Lamb, go back to the last episode. And I highly recommend that if you haven't listened to episode 91, stop this, go listen to that one first, and then come back to this, because what we talked about there is going to set the stage. It's going to build on each other, right? So, but Dr. Karen Lamb, she's a naturopathic doctor and a counselor, and she's got some really, some great expertise from her training in trauma and highly sensitive people, but she also is just this person who, for some reason, was just given the gift that she is able to understand and recognize these things and conceptualize these things in a way that I have never experienced with anybody else, whether it's a therapist or a professor or somebody, trying to explain or write about these things. So that's why we had to bring her here and why we are giving her so much time to make sure we really fully investigate these things for you. So welcome back, Dr. Karen Lamb. Thank you for your generosity to keep coming back and talking to our community about this really important topic.
You couldn't keep me from not doing it. This is my favorite thing.
So in our last episode, we wrapped up with how parents might understand if they themselves are experiencing trauma. And we have a really important question that we need to start off with for the parents who might be recognizing that they might be experiencing some trauma themselves.
Yeah, I feel like I need to just rip the Band-Aid off and talk about the thing that I don't want to talk about first. And that's us as parents. Like, how is it ever okay for us not to address it? And I'll preface a conversation I had a couple weeks ago with another PAN's mom. And we were going back and forth and we were talking about how, like, it honestly feels like we're okay. And that for me, I don't want to address the trauma. Like, I feel like I have it tucked away. And even though homeopathy in a really lovely way has helped me kind of almost forced me to work through that. And it's been a really positive experience. I don't want to feel it all. I don't want to go back through it. Is it okay in any world for me to just leave it there and not address it? And that's as far as our kids go too, because I have the same in the last episode I was asking about Avery is, you know, do we go back and address some of that trauma or can we just leave it?
Yeah. What an important question in many respects. Like, I want to pick out a couple of different bullet points of what you asked and break it down into multiple answers, because you've hit on really important issues like unpacking it again. Like, big, I feel like I'm doing okay. Do I have to? You know, especially given how much you've invested, you know, in your child's medical care and psychological care, there can be just a sense of liberation from that once you have gone through the treatment and hopefully had a successful outcome like you. So the first component of that is it ever okay? Yes, There are certainly times when it is absolutely okay, and sometimes even the best thing to do. So that might be when you're in the midst of the trauma, which I know we're going to talk about quite a bit, because that may be an overload, right? We're going to get into that, so I won't spend very much time on that. But there are definitely times when it is okay to not seek out trauma treatment for the parent or child, because there are other priorities. And sometimes those priorities can be just your life, right? Of the gift of getting to reconnect with your life in a way that maybe had been taken from you for a really, really long time. So there's so much therapeutic value in that alone. Mm-hmm. So I think flexibility is really important. It's not I'm certainly not someone who's like, everyone should always fill in the blank ever. Like I'm mm-hmm. not an always right. person because yeah. everybody's picture is so unique. Mm-hmm. So flexibility is really important. I'm also a huge proponent of resourcing and ourselves and our children so that we have objective third parties that can help us make these decisions. So if you feel like it is good, I am good, we are living our lives and this feels really healthy for us, yeah, absolutely. You know, go on with that thought process and find healing within that. If you're even a little part of you is unsure, finding resources and connections with people, providers that are really aligned with you can be really helpful. We touched on this in the last episode, that it helps us to not have to be responsible for making all of the decisions. Mm-hmm. So that third party can help us discern if this is something that might be of benefit, and going in and saying, you know, I don't know that we necessarily need this, but can you help me identify anything that might be supportive, or even just developing that relationship with a provider so that you can have it available if things shift, right? So perhaps something else completely unrelated to your child's life happens that's unexpected and a hardship. Now you have that provider and that relationship. And I think that's a really valuable investment.
That yeah. feels very good to hear that it that it's okay, that it can be either way.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that the key is preventing compounding trauma as much as possible. And we're going to talk a lot about that today. Whenever
that means.
Yeah. Okay.
So I have to ask about, like, are there risks or impacts that come from suppressing trauma? So like, what choices will, or what are the consequences of the choice that people might make if they decide not to address it ever, versus like waiting to address it at a time that's more appropriate? And I say this from two perspectives. I say this from the perspective of somebody who recently learned in the last couple of years just how good I am at suppressing all of the things that I learned from my time in the military, most likely, and potentially just, you know, being raised as by Midwest farmers. You suck it up and drive on, right? So I have learned just how good I am at suppressing, and it reached a point that I couldn't do it anymore, which is when I figured out how good I was at suppressing, or where the suppression itself was causing me problems because I wasn't managing the emotions and they were affecting me in different ways. The second thing is from the perspective of a homeopath, where we see in homeopathy, a lot of things can come out. Like if suppression of certain emotions are like prolonged, we can end up having physical ailments from it. And I feel like I need to reach over for the book, The Body Keeps the Score, that I haven't read yet, but it's on my shelf, because I feel like that, like somebody probably just thought of that. So what are your thoughts about suppressed trauma and long-term impacts?
Thank you for bringing that up. I wanted to validate the fact that people can get through difficult things and be okay. So it is a possibility.
Yeah.
And what we see more often than not is the aftermath of the suppression. either because of the invalidating environment, either whatever. I mean, there's just so many reasons why that happens, and it's so common. But the effects are so widespread, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, these trauma settles in the tissues in the body. And so it's not just an interpersonal psychological issue or where people might expect it to arise. It's going to be in the cardiovascular system. It's going to be in the GI system, you know, in the nervous system and musculoskeletal pain. It can show up anywhere in the body. And it is more common that the suppression be problematic than not. Mm-hmm. And so that is why that third party of, you know, before those physical symptoms start, to just address the possibility that this might be the case.
And I just want to make sure that we validate a couple of things. So if you happen to skip the last episode, we did talk about how there's a susceptibility component that, you know, not everybody is going to experience the same event that could be traumatic with the right. same, whether they're going to have even a trauma response at all. And then the specific way they have a trauma response if they do. So just validating that not everything that is hard is going to lead to trauma. So that's true. Like you might truly have managed to walk through pans and pandas and not had a trauma response to it. And I also want to validate the people who have like, just, I have to stick it up. I have to drive on to validate that, like, that could be part of why you physically don't feel okay. Because if that is the case for you, because I've seen a lot of people who feel like their body starts to give out on them and they wonder if it could be related to the really traumatic thing that they went through before. And it's frequently not validated.
And how that response of I have to keep pushing can in and of itself be a trauma response, because especially when you had or have a pans pandas child that is requiring every moment a different decision, a different medical decision, a different intervention for your family, a different provider, you know, you're constantly on your toes with something like that. And stopping that, slowing it down after it has passed is really difficult. So that's actually a really great way to try to discern it yourself. Do I have difficulty relaxing? Do I have difficulty slowing down? That's a wonderful thing to seek support for, even if it's not necessarily trauma related, or we can't pinpoint, you know, that it was trauma related. That's the compounding trauma effect, is that you keep pushing, you keep becoming depleted, and then you're more susceptible for that next, you know, whatever life brings is more likely to have a trauma effect on the body.
Yeah. I feel like I'm like, y'all are talking and I'm like identifying with a specific time and need to pause and say this to moms who have kiddos that are further into the healing journey, starting to come out of pans, life is starting to get a little bit more normal. And that what y'all are talking about, where I was still like pushing and going and researching and mm-hmm. and like trying to keep away from triggers and doing all that, like I could not turn that off. And I think that's super important as we shift into like, what does life look like after pans, as a mom, as a human, as a, like, every part of our family and our world just starts to change whenever things get better. And shifting my mom brain out of pans mode didn't happen when Avery healed. That was still going, and I think still a little bit still going with my younger daughter healing. So I think that would be an important time to really look into addressing it. What about siblings? I see so frequently moms ask about how are brother and sister experiencing trauma? Is this traumatic to them? The way that pans impacts them, it's got to be traumatic for them too.
Yeah, I think that's a great example of more than likely little T's, but I mean, sometimes if it's dysregulating enough to the family dynamic, it can certainly turn into a big trauma for them. And I've seen some siblings of pans and pandas kids be very, very resilient, where the family makes an extra effort to create structure for them and connection with them, because obviously there's so much involved with their siblings' care that there's less of available resources oftentimes for them. But the unpredictability that can occur with this type of environment really can shift the family dynamics so significantly that they can feel powerless. They can feel like it's their responsibility if they're super young, to try to do something. Because remember, these children, all children, believe that anything that happens in their environment developmentally is their fault. They are, they're the center of their own universe. And so they're related to everything. And that's when you can start to see some maladaptive behavioral patterns evolve in children, where they become overly responsible at a really young age, trying to control a really chaotic environment if it turns into that, because it's confusing otherwise. And that can be really scary. So I think that, what I've seen in some Pans and Pandas parents that have had a lot of success with this have been creating a lot of structure for the other child, spending one-on-one time with them, and doing things, routines that are helpful in calming their nervous system down. So I was actually just reading about a study on facial massage in children at bedtime, and how calming it is for the nervous system. So it doesn't have to be that per se, but something that allows the parent to have that one-on-one time with the child can be really restorative and protective. And it's structure again, right? So something that creates some sort of predictability for them, and of course all of their life activities, right? That's another thing that I've seen, is making sure that other child has their dance or their sports or their friends outside of the home. And in one case, I remember a mom talking about having a space in their house that was quiet and secluded, and it was like their peaceful place in the house, which I love. Peaceful place is actually one of the things that we use in EMDR, which is a trauma therapy. And so they created this for them in the house. And I thought that was really lovely.
I love that. I never even thought about doing it for sibling. I did it for Avery, and that was one of her little spaces where she was able to go and recover. Never thought about doing it for sister. Yeah. And giving her a little safe, quiet space. It's a great idea. Yeah. What about prioritizing or addressing trauma when literally everyone in the house is in the middle of it and everybody's struggling?
I just had a flashback to the pandemic. every family has gone through that. And it gave me a little insight into, that for Pans and Pandas families, the metaphor of place your oxygen mask on yourself first. And that's hard as a mom. I think that takes training. And that's one of the ways that when I'm working with someone who's in a really acute state of crisis, where things feel totally overloaded and overwhelming, it's nice when we already have that relationship, because, I can show up to help ground them on things that we already know are beneficial for them, and reminding them that they are, especially, I don't want to overgeneralize, but it typically is the mom that these things fall on. We have an intuitive sense about things, and we have a connection with our children that is biologically different. Every child leaves cells in the mom's body that connects them in a way that's just different than the other parent. And so the importance of us tending to our needs so that we can be resourced is so important. So in your question, you're asking, how do we prioritize if there's a fire, and which is what it oftentimes feels like, then we're distracted to want to tend to that first. And sometimes that is what's necessary in those moments. But coming back to the fact that our nervous system is literally managing the entire household as the mother, is an important element of how to prioritize. And that, in my experience, requires a lot of support to be able to put my mask on first. I know that sounds weird because it's like, well, I'm supposed to put my own mask on. But, you know, our tendency is to look at others. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you guys think? Is that how it is for you?
I feel like as Pan's moms, one of two things. My kid's the one that needs the help right now. I'm fine. I'm okay.
Yeah.
Or if I shouldn't say Pan's moms, maybe this was just me. Like, I felt like if I was going and getting my own help, that was selfish because my kids' worlds were like burning down. And why am I going to go to the doctor and do anything? Because it's them that needs help, not me. So it felt like I was doing something wrong if I were to be seeking my own help.
Yeah. And the guilt. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's exactly why it's so important for the moms to seek help, because that's a trauma response, right?
But yeah, I have a couple of thoughts with this. So my first thought is that, one, whenever I have that sort of question or that guilt about like, well, what should I be doing or what should I be giving to my daughter? And how is me giving this thing to myself taking away from my daughter or my family or whatever? And then my first question is, what would I want? What am I teaching my daughter? What do I want my daughter to see? Would I want her to sacrifice in this way when she's my age? So that one helps me a little bit with it. The second thought that I have is that I agree that if you are the one who's like trying, like the air traffic controller or whatever of the family, I always say mom's the nervous system of the family, right?
Right.
And if mom's not doing well, nobody's going to do their best. but I think that the reality is that just sort of like, even if you're taking away pans and you're taking away trauma and you're just dealing with like anything with a kid, like you can't help coach a kid through a tantrum if you are also having a tantrum. So how could you help someone recover from trauma if you are still actively experiencing the trauma yourself or experiencing the effects of trauma that you might be over? So to me, it's almost like there's enough work that needs to be done just within your daily life and within your home to help fully recover from trauma and like learn new adaptive strategies and everything after you do all the magic processing that we're going to talk about next episode. That if you can't exist in a more steady space, you're not going to be able to help your child get to a steady space. Like the highest space they're going to be able to get to is where you're at, really, because you're not going to be able to help them get any higher than where you are, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I wish I could, like, what you're explaining makes sense to me because I've been through, you know, doing homeopathy and some of my own healing. That's such a hard thing to understand. And it's why, like, you used to tell me when Avery was healing, you got to, like, Jody, you got to do something. You got to, like, help yourself somehow. And I was like, oh, that's ridiculous. I'm fine. I'm good. And I just didn't understand how much it would have helped me to help myself while I was in the middle of that. I like wish I could infuse that into moms, this like knowing or this understanding of how helpful it is. And I saw how helpful it was to do some of my own healing and then observe symptoms in my younger daughter who's still healing. It really did change things, like having me in a better state of mind, and being calmer and more relaxed and not getting sucked into the storm, just still moving through everything, but moving through everything with a little bit more calmness and ease makes such a huge difference. But that's so hard to understand when you're in the middle of it. It doesn't feel like you need help.
Yeah. Or that you can take on yet another thing, right? Because that takes resources and time and and it is incredibly valuable to the health of your family and the healing of your child. I think that's what we can leverage as moms is, okay, this will be good for them. as well, because I think it's much easier for us to get behind something that's going to be beneficial for our family versus saying, oh, I have to take this time out for myself. Even though that's perfectly valid, it's just easier for us to engage with something that's going to be beneficial for a community.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. We got several questions about generational trauma. So can you talk to us about what generational trauma is, how it might show up with people, and just your thoughts in general?
Yes, I love this topic as well. It's become a pretty hot topic, and it's something that was very interesting to me, especially in working with sensitive people, because this is a trait that tends to be inherited, sensitivity, high sensitivity, and generational trauma can be as well. So there's lots of studies on the Holocaust survivors. That's where this has really picked up momentum, finding that the ancestors of Holocaust survivors had they had changes in their stress regulating genes. Genes, genetics related to regulating stress. So in nervous system, right? That's where that's going to manifest. And since that research was released, it's become a really hot topic in understanding that these patterns aren't just passed down behaviorally. Obviously, that's the case as well, but also genetically. So let me back up. Generational or ancestral trauma refers to trauma that is transmitted across multiple generations. And as I mentioned, the Holocaust study was really big on that, but we're seeing more of this, of these studies, because of the spotlight that it's putting on trauma and genetics and epigenetics, which is kind of the combination of the behaviors that can be inherited, as well as how that impacts and changes our genetic expression. So behaviorally, we can start to model some of the PTSD symptoms. So a great grandparent that was in a war or had a significant trauma may have modeled fear or avoidance or emotional suppression. And that can be not just transmitted genetically, but obviously behaviorally as well. And then there's, of course, parenting styles that might be inherited or reactive to what they saw in their lives. So maybe somebody one of the parents was neglectful. The grandparents. So then the parent is overprotective of their child. And this can manifest in so many different ways and lead to further experiences of trauma. But ancestral trauma and generational trauma being genetic is, I find, really super fascinating. Have you seen that in the Pans and Pandas community?
Not a lot, but I have seen some. And the thing that I love and that I lean on so much with homeopathy is that homeopathy works on the epigenetic level. So I'm glad that you already brought up epigenetics, because I do see things that are, I mean, I'm not an expert in generational trauma or trauma in general, which is why you're here talking to us and we're not just doing this on our own. So I can't say for sure, but I see homeopathy help to heal the things that have been attributed to generational trauma. And I see one of the things that's like so helpful for people to hear is that because homeopathy works on the epigenetic level, it can be like a cycle breaker on its own, right? So the things that affect you are that like that have been passed down through generations, it can change that trajectory moving forward, because it changes things for you and for your future children.
Yeah. The epigenetic component and homeopathy, of course, I love it, are absolute game changers. And especially, I mean, I focus on the highly sensitive person. And so it's just one of my favorite modalities for them, because, or us, I should say, because it can be so gentle. And I always say that with a caveat of it's also very powerful, and we have to respect the homeopathy. But with sensitive people and ancestral trauma, there's we all have an ability to have nervous system coupling. And this is really relevant to everything we've been talking about. When you are in a household of people in really intensely overstimulated states, our nervous systems couple, especially children with parents, with moms, especially children with moms. But it can happen with the other parent as well, and the partners as well. But when sensitive people, a highly sensitive child is in an environment with a parent or parents who have experienced trauma, highly sensitive children are particularly skilled at being able to couple their nervous system with those around in their environment. And when that happens with somebody who has trauma in their nervous system, that is another way that trauma can be transmitted, you know, from it's kind of an abstract concept to understand, but I've seen it so many times where, and then the child might start to develop some of the personality traits, like even personality disorder traits of the parent, which can be learned behaviorally, but there's something different that happens with highly sensitive children where it integrates at a level that is just not, it can't be explained behaviorally. You know, it's just something that is inside of their nervous system. And it can be very challenging to understand and validate and to shift. But that's another example of how this generational or ancestral trauma, especially because the sensitivity trait is also inherited. So then it can continue to happen over generations.
So if somebody believes that they have generational trauma, or they know that they have generational trauma, are the trauma therapies we're going to talk about in next episode, are they beneficial in generational trauma, or is there a different approach that needs to be taken?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it's so exciting to see that. I think I have witnessed more tears, and I have myself cried the most in sessions when people do this type of work, because it's so impactful. And you can then see, oh my gosh, look at this in my family lineage. And I am changing that story. It's really powerful and wonderful. Yes.
All right. That's fantastic.
It's such a fun time too, because I feel like we're all kind of like waking up to like the realization that we don't just have to stick with this stuff. Like there's so many things that we can do about it. And there's so many ways that we can help ourselves, which in turn helps our children. And I don't know, I just feel like it's a really cool, and I don't even see it from your perspective, but just from women my age that are learning it and going through it and realizing that we have the ability to kind of change that narrative, change that trauma and the way things are going, and turn it in the direction we want it to go in. I think it's really neat. It's empowering. Yeah. And to men too, not just women.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Actually, a couple of men came to mind when I was talking about those sessions that, you know, that were just so moving. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not just women. I think that we tend to be more open to it, but it's even probably more powerful, honestly. Yeah. Right. If men do this work as well. Yeah. Good point.
I was thinking the word empowering. And at the same time, I was also thinking of the burden that we put on women so frequently for like the emotional health of everybody everywhere. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I just want to acknowledge that if it didn't feel empowering to you to hear about the ways that you can change, or instead you felt like, oh, here's one more thing, let's just throw this on my back and I'll Sherpa everybody up the hill while I'm like making sure everybody else is okay. I just want to acknowledge that too, that like we can, and we can choose not to as well, right? We can choose not to like, take on that burden of healing past traumas and future traumas and our own all at the same time. Right.
Right. That's why I started that first answer to the first question about, do we have to, mm-hmm. with no, you don't, because I think that having permission to choose mm-hmm. to not in and of itself can be very therapeutic. So mm-hmm. yes, I'm just really glad you said that. Don't have to share.
So another thing that's coming up a lot that I'm hearing like out, even outside of our community with Pans Pandas parents, but just in general, I'm hearing more and more about complex PTSD, I don't know what this is. I'm hoping you can teach me as well as teach everybody in our community so that we can understand more about this topic that seems to be getting more attention.
Yeah. And it is really important to understand that it's a type of PTSD. So complex PTSD is a branch of PTSD. And it's similar to how we talked about PTSD, with the big T's being typically a single event. Complex PTSD can be more of a chronic experience, and typically is a chronic experience of big T's or a tremendous amount of little T's. And so this happens when people oftentimes feel like they can't escape a situation, or it feels inescapable or impossible to escape. And is prolonged for a really extensive period of time. And so the effects are compounded, and this complex PTSD requires a very different approach. I mean, PTSD in and of itself can be complex, but there is it's like another level of complexity. So we see this with severe neglect or childhood abuse, especially the younger a child is when they experience a big T, and especially one that they feel they can't escape, the more long lasting the effects are. Domestic violence, war, of course, all of the things that we talked about with big T's only prolonged. So maybe it's a prisoner of war, not just an event in a war, although war in and of itself is enough, right? Chronic medical trauma, if it lasts long enough, and if it feels unsupported long enough, this can lead to complex PTSD, especially if there's really invasive medical procedures. That's something that I've seen quite a bit. Once again, another plug for homeopathy, right? There's that opportunity for gentle and validating treatment. I'm trying to think. Emotionally abusive relationships, which of course can also be in the medical world, right? Mm-hmm. Especially conventional doctors that don't have the training and therefore don't understand something and then just say it doesn't exist or it's in your head or whatever. That can, if it goes on for long enough, can certainly fall into this category.
Yeah. I'm curious if how you feel about the recurrent trauma while it's happening impacts the complexity or severity. And I say this as I'm thinking about the parents who can't escape because they have to take care of their child who might be physically harming them, or holding them prisoner in many ways, because of what's going on. So if a parent, does it make a difference if a parent is taking care of a child and is unable to escape because it's their child, but still has loving feelings for the child versus like an, you know, abusive domestic partner situation where they can't escape because of various different reasons and might not feel loving and really wants to escape? Does that have any impact, or is it really just the body just like, nope, this was trauma no matter what?
Yeah. And I've seen that. I've seen that a lot with highly sensitive parents of children going through something like PANS and PANDAS treatments, and the, maybe even before the treatment, you know, the peak of it, where they have so many needs of self-care as sensitive people and can't get to it. And so there's this inescapable, I can't get to myself. I can't get to the care that I know that I need. And this little person is coupling with me, and as at times abusive, it's compounded. Yeah. And I don't think there is a difference in the nervous system.
Yeah.
I think there's protection around the love for sure. You know, to help prevent the severity, but I have seen complex PTSD from the exact thing that you just described. So it happens.
Okay. And you said that treatment for complex PTSD is a little bit different. So we'll touch on that next episode, since it's probably more common in the PANS PANDAS community than maybe was realized. So I'm glad we talked about this. Mm-hmm.
Should someone address trauma when they're still actively in trauma or wait until after it's stopped?
That's a good question. And in a vacuum, we would wait until it has totally stopped, because safety is very important for healing trauma. A feeling stability, safety, the bandwidth for self-regulation is really important in addressing trauma. Having said that, life is really messy. And there may not come a moment where we feel like things have settled enough. Maybe the crisis has passed, but things don't really feel settled enough. And so I just want to mention that it may feel like there's never a really great time, to do that trauma work, and also differentiate trauma work from therapy. You can be going to therapy and getting support and learning how to regulate your nervous system in these little micro treatment, micro interventions, without addressing the trauma, and having a collaborative relationship with your therapist and being very clear, like, I know this is traumatic. I don't want to touch that. You have every right to say that. And if the therapist isn't open to that, then you need to find a new therapist. Because some people have really rigid views about how to proceed with somebody's care, and it should never be that way. It should be, you should really be the one, calling the shots and being willing to listen, obviously, to their recommendations. But to answer your question, ideally, we would wait until you're completely out of that period of your life. But if it's lasting years and years and years, then there are plans that can be developed that are gentle. Homeopathy, again, and a combination, because homeopathy can help to open bandwidth. And then that can make you feel like trauma work, gentle trauma work, is accessible.
We'll talk about this a little bit more next episode, but like homeopathy plus therapy together with the right combination, oh, it's magic. It's like both work better together, yes, than either works alone. All right, we got a couple more questions about trauma itself before we can actually get to the next episode for you guys about the ways that we address trauma. So there were lots of people who had questions about like gestational or birth trauma. So this could be, we had a couple questions about people who had children who were exposed to like drugs or alcohol in utero, or that had traumatic birth experiences, ended up in the NICU. And so they had separation from their parents for a period of time. So can you talk to us a little bit more about like gestational or birth trauma and that, how that might affect people?
Yeah. So when a nervous system is just developing, it's really susceptible to stress hormones. So if a mom is experiencing stress because of any of the reasons that you mentioned, it can be environmental, it can be, environmental meaning toxic exposure, malnutrition, medical interventions. I mean, I've known women who have had to undergo significant medical interventions while pregnant. And ironically, the worry that mom has for the baby can have an impact on their developing nervous system. So this is, it doesn't mean that the baby will develop some sort of perinatal trauma, but the fetus is susceptible to high amounts of cortisol and adrenaline that the mom has happening in her body. So I think it's something to be aware of. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen, but if you know that you have had a significant trauma during your pregnancy or the baby's birth, doing certain interventions, can be really beneficial. One of my favorite things for, especially perinatal, when the baby's an infant, is cranial sacral therapy, because it helps to flush out the nervous system through opening lymph support, and it's super super gentle and very very safe for babies. I know we're going to have a whole section about treatments, but that, I don't know, I just feel like that one's needing to be It needs to come out right now. So, you know, if especially, and this is hard to distinguish when the baby is really young, is excessive difficulty sleeping, you know, where they're just hypervigilant and really, really anxious going into toddler and young child ages, because the nervous system was overstimulated by these stress hormones and may have a stuck fight or flight or sympathetic autonomic response. And then being really sensitive to stimuli. So that we know, we see that in drug addicted babies, you know, mothers who had exposure to drugs and the baby is born addicted to them. You'll see hypervigilance, anxiety, difficulty sleeping, the sensitivity to lights and sound. And this can look similar, even if there are no substances, you know, that's an overstimulated nervous system in a baby, whether it was from a birth trauma or potentially, you know, significant exposure to stress hormones from the mom.
I can't help but wonder where the overlap is between gestational or birth trauma and a highly sensitive person. And if it could be hard to distinguish the two, or if like one is a cause of another, or yeah. And I'm just, cause it would be hard to tell from birth, right?
Yeah. That plus the epigenetic piece and the ancestral trauma, like all of those things definitely bring up really interesting questions about highly sensitive people. And we also know that about 20% of the population has that trait. So yes, not just in humans, but in across multiple species. So there's theories that say that it is evolutionarily beneficial. But who knows, maybe 20% of those had birth trauma or gestational trauma. So yeah, it's a valid question for sure.
Well, I think that the good news is that all the stuff we're going to talk about in the next episode about ways to address this to help support people through trauma and whether they're highly sensitive or not, it's going to be beneficial no matter what, right? So a lot of the things that we are talking about are things that you don't necessarily, so like with homeopathy, you don't have to know exactly what it was. You just need to know what your body's doing. And there's a lot of therapies that I know that you're going to talk us through that we don't necessarily have to know or even necessarily revisit the thing. And we can help our nervous systems rewire, and we can learn ways that we can navigate the world with a little bit more ease. But before we get there, I have one more question for you, and then we'll pause for today, and then we'll come back with our episode for next week, where we talk all about the opportunities and options for getting support with us. So I've seen a couple of questions come up about parents who are being told from one provider that there's trauma-based OCD, and then from other people hearing that there's no such thing as trauma-based OCD. And this obviously comes up a lot more in our community, where OCD is a predominant symptom for a lot of families. And OCD is one of those things that just, it's sticky. It's sticky, like in all therapies, no matter what you're using to try and address OCD, it is sticky and it is tough. So we're seeing people who are, you know, seeking additional support. They just, What are your thoughts? Is trauma-based OCD real?
Yes. Yeah. What do you guys think?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Well, I mean,
perfect sense.
We know that trauma has perseveration. So when does perseveration cross the line into intrusive and intrusive thoughts and compulsive behaviors to control the thoughts? Like, I don't see how you could think that you would have trauma and not have OCD associated with it to some degree.
Yes.
Okay, there we go. Yes, there's the answer.
Yeah, I mean, just, Jody, were you going to say something? I definitely have other things to say, but it's just like, of course, right? Yeah. Like, how could this not be a possibility?
Why ask those doctors if they understand trauma and they understand that trauma comes with intrusive, repetitive, unwanted thoughts and a lot of effort to try and control those thoughts. And how do you define OCD?
Yes. Jody, sorry.
No, it's okay. I feel like my brain was just like catching up with you guys, because I've never really thought about this. And I'm sitting here like thinking about all the like OCD things that I ended up doing based on my children's illnesses. And firmly agree. Yes. Like I had a whole bunch of stuff that I was doing on repeat obsessively, whether it be because I had to in order to keep my kids safe, or because my own brain was in it, not was scared and not feeling safe and fearful. Yes.
You were doing it to keep yourself safe too.
Yes.
Right. And that's the whole point.
I don't know why. Yes. I just never really thought about it.
Yeah. And here's an interesting conceptualization of that. So of course, OCD is conventional. Well, not of course, OCD is conventionally understood to be a genetic or a neurobiological inherited susceptibility that can develop more intensely as we age. That's what's understood about the traditional definition of OCD. But with trauma-based OCD, if we go back to what some of the things that have come up in our conversations around nutrient depletion and just losing resources because of the heightened metabolic state of PTSD or trauma, right? We're in a hypervigilant nervous system state, so we're going through way more chemical reactions than the average person. So that could mean that we deplete our neurotransmitters, specifically dopamine and serotonin. And that is actually a sign to the nervous system that we're not safe because we don't have the chemistry in our body to keep us awake and asleep in the way that we're supposed to and vigilant enough, et cetera, et cetera. OCD, obsessions and compulsions, can be an addictive mechanism where we are like the little mouse in the laboratory that's pushing on the lever, the dopamine and the serotonin lever. When I obsess about this, or when I have rituals around this, it can create a release of dopamine. It can trigger a release of dopamine and serotonin to help regulate our moods and help us to feel safer from that angle.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I think that's a fantastic place to pause, because I know we're going to get into all sorts of more details about this kind of thing in our next episode. So make sure you join us. If you haven't followed us or subscribed yet, please do so, so you don't miss the final episode that we have with Dr. Karen Lamb coming up. So we will make sure everybody knows how to get in touch with you at the end of that one too. So we will give them a little teaser to make sure they come back. So we'll join you guys next week with more information on how to deal with all the stuff we've just spent the last 2 weeks talking about. So until then, guys, take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We try to get a new episode out every week. You can make sure you don't miss any by following us on Spotify or subscribing to our channel on YouTube. If you want to connect with us more, join our Facebook group, Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas, where we have exclusive weekly videos and answer your questions about, you guessed it, Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas throughout the week. If you are already a member, give us a shout out and let us know what you thought about this episode. If you aren't on Facebook and would like to reach us, you can email us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com. Until next time, take care and remember, this won't be forever.